welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are doing something completely unheard of. We are moving away from movies and instead looking at the massive hit Netflix series Stranger Things, created by and for the most part directed by the Duffer Brothers. Joining me on the show today to talk about Stranger Things is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to do this just because I watched this show. It came out in the summer. It came out like in July. And then everybody was talking about it. And so around August, I watched it. And I was immediately hooked. I finished the whole thing in like a couple of days. And I think this is one of the best shows out right now.
Well, happy Halloween. I think so, too. It's a really interesting mix of 80s nostalgia and, favorite films from that time.
And it's very, even though it's a TV show, I think the best TV shows are very cinematic in quality. Like you think of your Game of Thrones or your Breaking Bad or what else. All those are very cinematic in quality. Almost feel like the whole series just feels like a very, very long movie. And once again, this show feels like it too. The way it's shot, the way everybody acts and the story progresses, it feels like a movie. It doesn't feel just like some TV show that looks like it's in a studio for the whole movie.
It's like a Stephen King novel directed by Steven Spielberg with music by John Carpenter.
That's the best way to describe it. And there's just so much 80s and late 70s sci-fi. Like you said, there's Steven Spielberg. There's a lot of Stephen King novels in it. And there's the John Carpenter music. And even though maybe a little bit of the films of John Carpenter, it just feels like the whole show is an ode to 80s nostalgia.
Yeah, exactly. There are so many references in there there's so many movies that have, the government agency that is doing some sort of weird experiment. And that goes to like Akira and to Alien. I mean, they have all kinds of stuff from Alien, the residue the monster leaves behind and the hazmat suits that they're wearing. You can see their faces and the masks, all that stuff. And the idea of cocooning, all that stuff straight out of Alien. The blood in the water and the reference to how sharks can smell just one drop of blood when they're hunting, and Barb, bleeds a little bit into the pool right before she's attacked. There's so many things that just remind you of those great movies. And I was born in the 60s, so in the 80s, I was in my 20s, my prime movie watching
years. This was like your nostalgia, probably.
A lot of these I saw in the theaters.
Yeah, I get maybe one complaint. I do feel that this nostalgia just gets a little bit too much. Like one scene where it definitely feels like they're doing E.T., it's when they're escaping. It's like the last episode, and they're escaping from the government agents. They're taking Eleven and helping her escape, and they're riding in bicycles.
Yeah, lots of bicycles.
And I was saying to myself, I swear to God, if that thing flies in the air, I'm just going to turn off the thing and walk out.
They even dress Eleven up to disguise her, which reminds me of that scene from E.T. also.
It's just like, and then like, even if you look, there's all the posters. Like they have a poster of the Thing. The older brother has a poster of the Evil Dead. They have Star Wars posters. There's all the 80s posters.
There's a poster of Jaws.
Yeah, and some of that it's okay, but some of it's like, let's be real. Okay, talk about The Thing. The Thing is now a classic, but when it came out, this is 1983. When it came out in 1982, it was a notorious bomb. It didn't do anything. I don't think there's a lot of kids, even it is a great film, that would have had the Thing poster in 1983. It took a little while for that thing to, become the classic that it is. And the same thing with the one kid that has the Evil Dead poster. The Evil Dead poster was this really shoestring budget movie that came out 2 years earlier. That's another thing that I don't think a lot of kids would have Evil Dead posters around 1983. Now, obviously, they're in there because the people who made the show love those movies. But I'm feeling like, going realistically, I don't think they would have those posters at that time.
Yeah, maybe who knew there were hipsters back in the 80s. Yeah, there's a scene from The Thing, though, where Jonathan and Nancy are torching the monster in Stranger Things. That's taken right from The Thing.
And exactly when the middle school science teacher, who's friends with the kids, he has this girl over at his house, and they're watching The Thing. And it's the scene where the alien comes out and the head's coming off. And he's like, well, you see, actually, they're using like all these special effects and like this melting wax to show the creature. And so it's just like, once again, 80s sci-fi in your face.
Well, and also Poltergeist. They actually modeled Mike's house to look like the house in Poltergeist.
Oh, really?
And there's a scene where Eleven is entranced with the TV, which, of course, reminds you of Poltergeist.
Yeah, and actually another... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say also, in, there's a flashback in episode one where Joyce visits Will in the woods and surprises him with tickets.
Got your tickets to Poltergeist.
Yeah, they really do underscore a lot of the references just in case you missed them the first time.
And even the 80s nostalgia is, in a way, in the casting with Winona Ryder. Now, this was a little bit before she became big with the stuff she did with Tim Burton, but it's even, I feel like even casting her is like, remember, you know, is sort of like, remember the 80s? Remember Winona Ryder when she was in everything and big?
Remember Winona Ryder before the scandal?
So I guess we'll talk a bit more about Winona Ryder. A lot of people praise her performance. I know when Stephen King praised the show, he actually said, you know, he singled out Winona Ryder as a really great element of the show. But other people don't like her very much. And I don't quite know how to feel, because some people say she's giving a great performance, but otherwise other people just complain that she's in give me back my son mode for the entire movie, which gets a little, I mean, for the show, which gets a little bit irritating after a while.
I think she's trying hard to play, you know, the caring mom who's trying to do the right thing. And, you know, there's only so much range with that.
You know,
they have her, again, doing things like the Christmas lights, which is, what was that taken from? Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Maybe.
Where you're contacting, you know, somebody from the other world with the Christmas lights. So some of the stuff that they're giving her are old tropes. So it's not like there's really new material. She just has to play the mother whose instincts are good, who has to try to save her son.
Yeah, and since today is actually Halloween, there's actually a lot of Stranger Things costumes out right now. And one of them is that somebody's dressed up as Winona Ryder, and she's holding the Christmas lights in her hand. So every time it lights up, she gets all happy.
Oh, that's a good one. That's pretty funny.
And one of the things I really liked about the show is, I think it's definitely the big reason why everybody's talking about it right now, is the child actors in the movie. All of them are great. Not only all the boys, but the girl is 11. I think she is probably my favorite of all the characters. But they're funny, and what I like most is they talk like kids. They curse a lot. They say, pardon my language, shit. They say, damn it. They don't act like not kids, like they were written by adults. They act like children, which is what I really like. And that's definitely going back to what Stephen King did with Stand By Me.
It's funny you mention that, because the directors, the Duffer brothers, had the kids run lines from Stand By Me to when they were trying out for the show. So yeah, then Stand By Me is definitely another one of those references.
Yeah, definitely when they're trying to help Eleven and they're going on the trip with her, they're even walking across the rail line.
Road tracks, yeah, they're having those dual conversations. Yeah, it's very much evocative of that. And then there's that other scene where one kid says, you know, they're racing each other to get home and for a comic. And he's like, any comic? Like, I'll take your Marvel number 134, which is part of the series that's called the Dark Phoenix, where there is a character.
Oh, X-Men?
In X-Men, there's a character named Marvel Girl, Jean Grey, who's overwhelmed by psychic and telekinetic powers. So it even gets some comic book stuff in there.
Oh, yeah, it's a big
for true nerds.
Yeah, I got that immediately when you talked about that. Like, oh, yeah, that's X-Men. And I'll have to get your thoughts on this one. One of the hugest fans' favorites, what I don't quite get, is the character of Barb. She was Nancy's friend. She's the smart one. She's like, you know, don't hang out with this guy. He's just trying to sleep with you. He's, you know, she's the one looking out for her. And then she's the one that gets eaten by the monster. But there's so many, you look at the internet, there's so many fan art dedicated to Barb. There's a Barb appreciation page. There's petitions to get her back on the show for some reason. I don't quite get it, just because she's not in the show that very much. She's just in for a couple of scenes, then she dies. Do you get why people are so attached to this character?
I think it's because her glasses remind them of Martha Plimpton's character in The Goonies.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, because you're right. She doesn't have a chance to really be developed as a character, and she dies pretty early.
Yeah, and actually going, like, one thing I do like is this show is very 80s-ish, but it goes against a lot of typical tropes, which is what I really liked. The two tropes I saw is the jock a-hole, you know, kind of trying to get...
Redeems himself,
and you actually realize he's not a bad guy, you know?
Which you didn't expect to see happen, because you thought, well, we know who this character is.
Yeah, because once you figure that once he slept with Nancy, you figure, like, oh, he's going to brag about it and leave her, but then he actually realizes he cares about her a lot. And even when he gets angry, like, when he finds, you know, with the other guy with the pictures, and then, like, he thought he... misunderstands the situation they're in, you can understand where he's coming from, and even realizes that when he spray paints the graffiti, the nasty words about the girl, he actually didn't write that. He was forced to by his friends who were sort of influencing him. So, and then at the end, you know, he helps them out, defeat the monster. And I actually like that. And actually at the end, she stays with him. You think she's going to go with the older brother, but she doesn't. She stays with the jock guy. And I really like that. I like how they kind of changed that up a bit.
Yeah, it was like how things really unfold. Characters change. Mm-hmm. People change alliances. They come back.
And then the other trope that I saw that was sort of killed off is as the slasher movie, you know, whenever the people get killed, it's always the final girl is the virgin, the pure one. She's the one that survives it all, and all her friends who are being sexually active and everything, they're the ones that die. And this one, it's completely different. The virgin, the pure one, Barb, she gets killed, and her friend who was sleeping with her boyfriend, she survives, and she is able to get rid of the monster.
At least they didn't make the girls wear high heels and bathrobes, though. We can be thankful they skipped that trope. You know, another thing that I see in this one with Eleven, because you're right, that actress is terrific in that role, is it reminds you also of Carrie, you know, another character who was, again, Stephen King, and very mild-mannered and quiet. But if you push them too far, then they're
deaf. I love that scene when the bully is harassing him at the event for their fallen friend, even though he wasn't really dead, but their fallen friend, and he's harassing them. And then the Eleven just puts the mind control on him and makes him pee his pants. I just started cracking up at that part.
Yeah, that was a funny scene.
And what's interesting about this show is, with the exception, I'd say, of Winona Ryder and maybe Matthew Modine, I don't know. I can't remember. I don't know who any of the other characters and the actors are in the show, as far as the kids or as far as the teens or even the adults. David Harbour, who plays Sheriff Hopper, who I thought was really good. He kind of had a blink and you'll miss him role in Suicide Squad and The Equalizer, but you know, this is a great role for a guy who I don't really know too much of, anybody I don't really know too much of, except for a couple.
You know, that actually is a reference to Predator. And if you remember Predator, the monster made that clicking sound before he strikes, and of course they use that. But the names Jim Hopper and Hawkins, the police chief and the town name, are both names of characters in Predator.
Oh, I didn't know that. Hopper, which one were they? I can't remember.
I'd have to look
it
up.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've seen Predator.
And you were talking earlier how you feel that this is a movie written by King, directed by Spielberg, and scored by Carpenter.
Yes.
I love the music to this. I actually downloaded the soundtrack quite a few weeks ago, and it's people I haven't heard of. It's Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein. I won't lie. I'm not familiar with other stuff they did, but it's really good. Just whether it's the intro for the show, really well done and very, very definitely Carpenter-esque.
Yeah, which makes people that reminds me of Nightmare on Elm Street and all of those other tropes that are also included in this as well.
Mm-hmm. And the people did notice that in a lot of tropes, so like references or callbacks to sci-fi movies, some people are even saying it's like after this time, like in that, you know, when she goes in the pool, when she's spread out like that, it feels like the two characters in Minority Report.
Report, yep.
And people were saying, well, that's 2002. That's a little bit after that.
But I also found a resemblance to Under the Skin, that Scarlett Johansson
in
2013 or whenever it was. Maybe it wasn't that late. Definitely in the 2000s, though, where she's an alien and she's luring men to their death. And there's kind of this dark, liquidy world that she inhabits when she pulls them under. Mm-hmm. That was very much in play when you're watching Eleven in the sleep, the sensory deprivation chamber, when she sort of sinks into this inky place.
Yeah, it's the black area and she's walking around and there's people that are there and they're like scared or trapped or what have you. Yeah.
And Firestarter with Drew Barrymore, really young Drew Barrymore, where she has special powers because her mother took LSD and the government is, you know, wants to weaponize her, and she bleeds from her nose after she does her thing. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of those things they picked up as well. But you did mention that the unknown actors, I think, is what makes the show seem fresh. It's some of the same old stories, but it's not the same old people. So it does feel like a new take on an old favorite.
Yeah, if you got big name actors in the film, like you got whoever's big now, if the sister was played by like Jennifer Lawrence or who what have you, I don't think it would be good because it'd be too distracting seeing these big stars.
Yeah, if they had borrowed kids who are in other HBO series or whatever, if you'd seen them before, they would have already had a time and a place established.
Mm-hmm. And so, now I'll be honest again about the Duffer Brothers. This is the first thing I've ever seen. They, looking at their IMDb list, there's not a, it's not very long. They did it. They worked on a TV show called Wayward Pines, and I think Shyamalan did that. I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen that either.
And they did a show, a movie called Hidden, and I heard it's kind of like 10 Cloverfield Lane, where people are stuck in a bunker. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that either.
Okay.
But they're all primed to be old, since they're the Duffer Brothers, so they'll soon be old Duffers.
So I'm looking for, I'll be, now that I'm aware of them and you're aware of them, I'm going to be looking forward to see what else they do, or if they're just going to stick to this show, or if they're going to keep like branching out to do other movies or TV shows.
Well, hopefully this is just the beginning of good things.
Yeah. And they're only, I think they're only like 30, so obviously a lot of time left for them to do more stuff.
Yeah. Lots more things to borrow from the past to put into Stranger Things season two.
Yeah. Like next it'll be the 90s and they're going to be like wearing like Nirvana t-shirts and they'll be watching Goodfellas and they're like, hey, how about that? It's the Clinton era or something. I don't know.
But yeah. Maybe they'll stay where they are. It's a good place to mine.
So looking back, they're going to do a season two and not quite sure where they're going to go with it, because I feel some people were saying that this feels like a good mini series, that if you stretch it out to a season two, it's going to get, there's just not only so much you can do for this show. And I was wondering how you feel about that, because they do leave a couple things up in the air, because at the end you see the kid, it's Will, right?
Will.
Yeah. And you see the slug come out of his mouth and he's briefly back in the upside down world. And you're
again,
thinking,
very alien.
Yeah, very. And you're thinking, maybe look, that leaves something up. And then you see Sheriff Hopper, he goes into the car with the agents. You're thinking, oh, is he working for the government? And then later you see him going out in the woods getting with a box of waffles, obviously, mm-hmm. which what Eleven likes a lot. So you're thinking, oh, she's alive and she's out there somewhere. So it leaves things up in the air. But I'm just wondering where, like, I'll have to ask you, if you were, say you're the writer, I'll give you the pen here. If you're the writer, where would you take it, season two? Or do you feel it needs a season two?
I wouldn't have done a season two because I think it had a perfect arc. I think leaving it with a question is a good idea. It's always tricky with child actors because they grow so rapidly mm-hmm. that what you have established as this aged, you cannot freeze in time. So, you know, it's tricky. And then you mm-hmm. have to worry about how many times you're going to return to the same well. Mm-hmm.
When you just talked about child actors, the one show that came to mind, which they did terribly, was the, you seen Lost?
Yes.
You know the character of Walt?
Yes.
That they did that terribly because he gets kidnapped and you're wondering what happens to him, and he just shows up after that. You know, he just shows up kind of every once in a while. And I think what they, because that time period takes place over a few months. Obviously, you're going year after year. This kid who's 12, a couple years later, he's going to look like, wow, that kid's grown in the last 2 months.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they
lost all control of Lost. It just got, well, they just didn't want to end it. People wanted to keep watching it, which is why you have to be ruthless mm-hmm. about cutting it off when people are still interested. If you think about Stand By Me, it was one day, you know, in the lives of these young kids. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, they all went their separate ways, and you were concerned about the story that followed for all of them. But you don't really need a Stand By Me, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, Don't say that now, because Hollywood will be like, oh, let's do a Stand By Me too.
Hey, I've got a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
How about Stand By Me too?
Yeah, they don't die this time. That was all a fake. You know?
Right.
Don't give them any ideas. And I guess we could talk about this TV shows. Netflix is, I think, really doing challenging, I think, TV shows really well with their program. Now, I've only seen a couple of shows. I've seen this show. I watch House of Cards. And actually watched the very first ever online show. It was called Lilyhammer. Have you seen that one?
I have seen it. I liked Breaking Bad very much. I like Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. Orange is the New Black is based on a book, though, and it diverges from the book big time. It's kind of taken on a life of its own.
Yeah, and I heard, was that like a true story or was it?
It's based on a true story. What they did that I think was smart, though, is to branch off from that main character because other characters became interesting. Hmm. And as you watch it, you get to find the backstories of all the minor characters, which is fun. It's a constant discovery, but it's nothing like the book.
Yeah, and it's just talking about TV shows. I feel that, you know, especially, because a lot of people said Stranger Things, since it came out the summer, was the best summer movie of the year. And just because the summer movies that came out this year were just so terrible. Like, I got so frustrated with it, I stopped watching a lot of movies. And I feel that almost, it's sort of reflecting that I think the quality series like on HBO, you know, with Game of Thrones or Westworld right now, or The Night Of, or AMC with Breaking Bad, or even I don't watch it, The Walking Dead, or Netflix with the shows we just talked about, I feel that there's a lot of great shows on TV right now. It almost feels like TV shows are getting, are almost better than movies right now.
You know, what's interesting is it's not just Netflix and HBO. It's TV Land coming up with their own original programming. Everybody's getting in on it, and I think it's great.
Amazon.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, it seems like a lot of the things I find on Netflix that are interesting tend to be HBO productions. So I think they do a pretty good job of coming up with stuff.
So I was curious, because one of the shows I'm watching right now is Westworld. Have you been watching that?
No, but I'm finally watching Game of Thrones, because people have been like, see, everybody makes that
face. Oh, my God.
What do you mean you don't know everything about Game of Thrones? I had watched the first two seasons and stopped. So I'm now on season three.
Season three?
Oh, man. I know. I've got a lot of ground to cover.
You got a lot of ground to cover. Okay. Well,
but
if you don't,
you're completely out of the loop with cultural references. But, you know, you can't just watch TV all day long.
Oh, yeah. Nice, well, one of the shows I don't watch because I'm not a big zombie person is Walking Dead. But my coworker, Matt, you're getting a shout out. He's a huge Walking Dead fan. And so there was this big mystery of one of the characters dies, like a Who Shot JR kind of cliffhanger. And he was talking about, like, oh, man, this happened. So I'm getting that spoiled for me. But I honestly don't really have an interest in that show. So I probably will never watch it anyway.
Well, I like to binge watch like a whole season in a day. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, when I watch Breaking Bad for the first time, I binge watch that stuff in like a week.
Otherwise,
like,
you drop too many threads.
Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit about Westworld. What other shows have you watched Breaking Bad?
I loved Breaking Bad. That was such a cool show. I don't know if you knew this, but the opening to it where they show all of the periodic table portions. Mm-hmm. If you gather them all together, it shows you how to make meth. That's why they picked those particular ones.
Oh, interesting.
They just had so many clever things in that show, and such smart writing, and it was, you know, a show for adults. You know,
definitely.
It wasn't all about car crashes and chase scenes.
Once again, that's kind of what I feel that TV show is doing better. Like, it treats you like an adult. It doesn't show, hey, let's just throw in explosions or this cool stuff just to keep you interested. Like, no, let's actually have a really good developed storyline and characters.
Yeah. Very sympathetic characters, and even unsympathetic characters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, TVs are definitely obsessed with anti-heroes.
I think we all are.
Mm-hmm. And so you've seen Breaking Bad. Have you watched Better Call Saul yet?
I have watched a couple of episodes of that. Yeah, I mean, it's just such a great premise. And that actor's terrific, too.
Bob Odenkirk.
And when you don't want the series to be over, it's nice when there's an offshoot.
Yeah, I was, when it first came out, I was like, I don't know if like we're going to, like this character who is mainly kind of comic relief in the show, like you're going to be able to do a whole show about his backstory? I don't know. But I was, the first episode got me hooked and I've liked it ever since.
Yeah.
So I guess now we're getting close. Now this is obviously a little bit later because this will come out after Halloween, but I guess sort of a Halloween recap, if you will. So what have you been watching this month in Halloween to get you ready, or what are you going to watch tonight?
Well, my all-time favorite is Young Frankenstein. That is, I think, the best movie for the season of all time. And, of course, The Nightmare Before Christmas is actually really about Halloween and Christmas, so I think it's more appropriate on Halloween than Christmas time. But as soon as you're done with Halloween, it's almost full speed ahead with the Christmas movies. So I don't really like horror films, so I won't watch any of those. But I do like some of the classics, the classic Dracula, and then the funny ones like with Leslie Nielsen with Dracula Dead and Loving It. You know, the classic Frankenstein. But I don't like the slasher film. I don't like the slasher.
Well, what about the first Halloween film? It's a slasher movie, but it's not violent at all, and it's really good use of shadows and camera. Do you like that movie?
No, I don't like.
Huh? You don't like John Carpenter's
kid? No, I mean, I think he's a very talented guy, but for me, that's not entertainment. I don't like to watch gore and horror.
But it's not gory. The thing is, there's very little blood at all. When people are getting stabbed or killed, you don't see anything. That's what's so great about it.
Yeah, when people are getting stabbed or killed.
One of these days I'll make you watch it. It's a great movie.
I'm sure it is.
But yeah, so the stuff I've been watching, kind of more in the same realm, I've been watching Universal horror films. Turner Classic has done a whole bunch of stuff this month. I've been watching Hammer horror films with Christopher Lee. And there's one film, French, so we can so we keep to talk about. It's a film that I'm almost obsessed with now. I want to keep watching it. It's Eyes Without a Face. Have you seen that?
No. Is that a series or a movie?
It's a movie.
Oh.
Eyes
no.
Without.
I need to find it.
It's a fantastic movie. I'll talk about it a little bit, but we could actually do that one show if you want. It's about this it's a mad scientist sort of. He was driving quite reckless one day and gets in an accident. His daughter was driving with him. He disfigures her face severely. And so what he does to get her face back is he kidnaps women and rips their and surgically removes their face and attaches them to his daughter. And, you know, it's sort of he keeps doing this and the daughter feels guilty about that. And the famous thing that's shown a lot in the posters and everything is to cover up the disfigurement of her face, she wears this featureless mask. It's just like a white mask. And it's just a really good movie. It's for 1960, it's pretty violent. It's pretty violent, but it's also very, like, people say it's poetic and beautiful. Like, the way the character of the daughter is when she wears the mask, she's very quiet, but she has this influence, like, with animals and stuff. It's really an interesting film. I really love that movie. Like, I'm obsessed with it right now, but it's really good. I encourage you to watch it.
I will definitely watch it.
Okay. So, getting closely to my questions here, is there anything I haven't covered about Stranger Things or just any other things we've talked about that you want to talk about now?
We didn't really talk about the George Lucas references. I mean, there were so many things in there about The Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
But you were saying you thought maybe that was a little overdone.
Yeah, it's a little bit too much callback to nostalgia. It's like, remember Star Wars? Like, you know, Star Wars, it's like, we get it. And honestly, I'm not a big fan of George Lucas. But anyway, that's a different story for another time. But
I think boys that age are all obsessed with Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, I was.
That's actually the only part of the references, the allusions to other movies and things that I thought was inevitable.
Yeah, obviously. And that's almost called back to E.T. because he's playing with the Yoda action figure and he's telling him about the story of Star Wars. So you do get that more E.T. call. That's meta callback. E.T.
meta
calling
callback.
Calling back to a callback, basically.
Calling back the callback.
Yeah.
Well, Better Call Saul.
Yeah. Okay, so then last question I'll have for you is just tell us about the classes you teach.
Well, actually, next semester for spring, the two courses that I don't teach all the time are Women in Film, which I am teaching with Teresa Foster, who is our women's studies expert.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the women's studies side. I'm the film side. And I'm also doing the history of animated film with Dave Hinton, and he is our gaming and simulation person. So we have, you know, two heads are better than one in that class as well.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about the hit Netflix series Stranger Things, created by and directed by the Duffer Brothers. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at armchairdirectors.podomatic.com. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, mouth breather.